I'd like to welcome you all here this afternoon. I'm David Feldman, the director of the Pears Institute here at Birkbeck. And it is a real pleasure to welcome you all, a talented and diverse collection of speakers and participants, people at all stages of their careers, doctoral students, eminent professors, scholars from different disciplines and from four continents. And I'm delighted you're all here. And I will be joined by others over the course of the next 2.5 days to think and talk about boycotts. Boycotts from the American Revolution to the BDS movement targeted at Israel. Anti-slavery boycotts, anti-Jewish boycotts of different sorts, anti-segregation boycotts, trade union boycotts, consumer boycotts, and the anti-apartheid boycott as well. I think this conference will break new ground in considering boycott movements as a whole. It's not that boycotts haven't been studied, but they've been studied as episodes, as discrete episodes, a procedure which obviously is a barrier to comparison and to understanding of the phenomenon. Drawing these disparate movements together in an experimental way is a useful step in itself. My co-conveners for this conference are Scott Urie from Tel Aviv University and Michael Miller from the Central European University in Budapest. Their ideas and energy and good sense have been vital in bringing us to where we are now, and I'd like to thank them very much for that. It's been a real pleasure working with them. The three of us are among the founding members of ICRA, the International Consortium for Research on Antisemitism and Racism, an organization which aims to be innovative and to reinvigorate the study of antisemitism and to rescue it from easy moralism and from questions and approaches that impede rather than advance understanding. Taking a subject such as boycotts as its first conference theme and to enable the discussion of BDS within that framework as a political movement and as a form of mobilization is an important sign of our intent in this respect. As I mentioned, I'm the director of the Pears Institute for the Study of Antisemitism here at Birkbeck. It's been in existence for almost 3 years now. And in that time, it has opened up spaces for conversations that could not have occurred elsewhere and has sought to connect questions around antisemitism to issues of racism and exclusion more broadly. And this conference is an extension of that work. Let me say a word about boycotts in general and a few of the questions we might ask of them. Clearly, we need to think about the effects of boycott movements. Are they most effective? Have they been most effective, as it were, as a form of propaganda by deed, as a means of constructing a political coalition, movements of protest and opposition? Or should we also attend to their direct economic and political effects, the effects of the boycott movement on its target? And indeed, how do these targets arise? Why are some states, some institutions, some practices targeted and not others? This sort of leads us to the well-known question of whataboutery. We know about whataboutery in the context of the BDS movement, but the question is not unique to the issues raised by BDS. When campaigners sought to boycott slave-grown sugar in the early 19th century, there was then also a whataboutery. In that case, what about the factory slaves? What about the children working in the factories of the Industrial Revolution? This was part of the rhetoric of the debates around the anti-slavery boycott as well. The concept, and indeed the term of boycott itself, arises halfway through the history we're considering. Of course, before the 1880s, we had boycotts, as it were, but these were boycotts, before the term boycott was coined. And this does raise the question of whether the new term made a difference. It raises a question about what terminology was used for these practices, not only in English-speaking countries before the 1880s, but across the world before the 1880s and after. These questions point to the relationship between the language of mobilization and the form of mobilization. It raises the question of what the people engaged in boycott movements thought that they were doing or are doing, and how this has changed over time. But to what extent we are dealing with a single tactic, a single tradition, or a plethora of tactics and traditions that have come to be grouped under the same name. The papers for this conference were assembled almost entirely as a result of a call for papers. And inevitably, the conference is not comprehensive. There are important gaps. The origins of the term boycott in Ireland is one of those gaps. Sporting boycotts and the Olympics are another, as is the Arab League boycott of Israel. I just want to say now a few words about the Irish case, about the eponymous Captain Boycott. Captain Boycott was a land agent for Lord Erne in County Mayo at the time of the Irish Land War between 1879 and 1882. The Irish Land League was a mass movement for tenant defence aimed at establishing peasant proprietorship in Ireland. Technically legal and non-violent, there was a substratum of intimidation in the practices of the Irish Land League. But its central activities were not violent. Rents were withheld, farms from which tenants had been evicted were kept empty, landlords and their agents were ostracized, socially ostracized in the communities in which they lived. In the case of Captain Boycott, shops would not serve him in the village of Palinrobe. He could not hire labour for the estate. He couldn't get his laundry done. And the postboy was intimidated from delivering to his address. Boycott wrote a letter to the Times newspaper, a traditional English practice, complaining of his treatment, and this led to a campaign being got up in his support. The point here is that Boycott presented himself as his condition as a case of victimization. 50 Orange men travelled to County Mayo to bring in the harvest on Lord Erne's estate under the protection of more than 1,000 police and troops. I think there are interesting parallels here to contemporary boycotts. The dispute over who was the real victim in the case is one in mind. Was it the impoverished Irish Catholic rural proletariat suffering at the hands of absentee landlords and their agents and Protestant supporters? Or was the real victim Captain Boycott, beleaguered, isolated, and friendless due to a campaign of intimidation? In this battle over rhetoric and representation, the parallels to the present are obvious and might become more so in the light of our discussions over the next day. Still more important, we can see from this case how almost a century before second wave feminists declared that the personal is political, that the personal was indeed political, or rather the political was personal. Boycotts are a tactic that inevitably cause upset. They take disagreements beyond the realm of political debates, speeches, newspaper articles, pamphlets and public meetings, and take those disagreements to the marketplace and into civil society and specifically announce that they want to reconstruct a marketplace or a civil society in such a way that it excludes goods, peoples, institutions. In short, it is not surprising that people find boycotts offensive. And this is not in itself a criticism of boycotts. Boycotts take political disagreements to an uncomfortable place. It is precisely because boycotts are a difficult and uncomfortable subject that I am especially grateful that you are all here over these days. Not least is this the case when it comes to the BDS movement, the focus not of the conference, but of Friday. On the web, this conference has been dismissed on one hand as an exercise in Hasbara, Israeli propaganda, or on the other hand, as a form of academic treachery against Israel. Of course, it is neither of these things, and the fact that you are here collectively speaks volumes in that respect. You are a hugely diverse group, bringing varied, empirical, disciplinary, theoretical, and political perspectives to bear on your scholarship. It would be impossible to get you to speak with one voice, even if I had that bizarre ambition. The academic conference is a different space to the web, and the rules of engagement are different. Arguments need to take a logical form, there are rules of evidence, and crucially, we assume others are speaking in good faith, even when we disagree with them profoundly. I'm delighted that you have all come here in this joint enterprise, and that we will be joined by others over the next days. In this sense, the goals of the conference, or the substantive goals of the conference, are modest, expressed in one way by the great anthropologist Claude Levi-Strauss in The Raw and the Cooked. There he wrote, "I do not doubt for a moment that further information already available or as yet unpublished will affect my interpretations. Some that are no more than tentative will perhaps be confirmed. Others will be abandoned or modified. No matter. In a subject such as this, knowledge advances haltingly and is stimulated by contention and doubt." Levi-Strauss continued that for scholarship to be worthwhile, it is not necessary that it should be assumed to embody the truth for years to come, and with regard to the tiniest details. "I shall be satisfied if it is credited with the modest achievement of having left a difficult problem in a rather less unsatisfactory state than it was before." In view of the absence of analysis of boycotts generally, and the understandable tendency of debate on BDS to generate more heat than light, if we even approach Levi-Strauss's goal in the coming days, I, for one, will be content. Let me now move to introduce our first panel, a keynote panel, where we'll have three speakers. First, I'm delighted to be able to introduce my colleague here at Birkbeck, Frank Trentman, Professor of History at Birkbeck, whose publications include Free Trade Nation, Commerce, Consumption, and Civil Society in Modern Britain, and whose new book on consumption from the 16th to the 21st centuries will be published by Penguin and Allen Lane next year. Our second speaker is Michael Miller from the Central European University. Michael's book, A Rabbis and Revolution, The Jews of Moravia in the Age of Emancipation, was published by Stanford 2 years ago. And Michael, as I mentioned earlier, is a founding member of ICRA and one of the conveners of this conference. And last, Saul Dubow, now of Queen Mary, University of London, but before then, at Sussex University. He took up his post as Professor of African History at Queen Mary at the beginning of this year. Most recently, Saul has published South Africa's History of Human Rights and his History of Apartheid, 1948 to 1994, will be published by OUP in 2014. And I will ask Frank to step up here to get us going.